8:01 in the a.m., Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Joining us right now in studio from FilmStudyBaltimore.com, he is Ken McCusick. Good morning to you, Ken.
Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Doing well. Doing well. We were talking about this yesterday, the Baltimore Ravens defense, so good in the preseason. And even though you could kind of scrutinize it and say who they're playing against, that's fine. I like the speed in which they play at, and I like this you can't really see scheme in the preseason, but they just seem to be so aggressive and play so fast.
Yeah, I think it's Trenton Simpson who was the first one to say this at the microphone. He said they had a shots on goal defense. You know, they're going for punch outs. You know, they're going to tip the ball, and you know, they had two nice undercuts for interceptions. They had a great reaction to a batted ball from Simpson in the air that JAD got, and then they had that punch out on the sack that Malik Ham caught right before it hit the ground. So there's not even a discussion about was his arm going forward or not, because it's either a fumble or an interception. So great game of turnovers. And honestly, they did a lot better with the turnovers. That was a lot of their defensive value in the game as opposed to what they allowed on a per-play basis.
What do you think about the some of the guys that were kind of on the bubble? Like, I guess, well, maybe not. But Rasheen Ali, LeJonte Wester, guys like that who – you know, I assume they're going to make the team, but how'd they perform?
Well, Jonte Wester was my number two offensive MVP, but the bar was low. Cooper Rush was clearly first, and then Jonte Wester was second. He's a couple catches for 28 yards, had a nice catch and run in there. And the other one you asked about, I'm sorry, it was Ali. Ran decently, fumbled the football at the end of one of his runs, which I think a lot of people, it went unnoticed to people, and people say, well, he got it back. And well, no, he put the ball on the ground. That's really important and not to do. And he, you know, just last week, of course, ball went right between his hands for an interception. So if he's safe on the roster, I think it probably means that Isaiah likely is going to start the year on IR. So maybe we'll talk about roster a little bit later.
Have you seen enough from Trenton Simpson to say that he is sitting next to Roquan and he's going to be a starter?
100%. Yeah. So I think that Teddy Buchanan has done some good things. He's had the green dot in some of these games. He's the replacement for either Roquan at the mic or at the will for Simpson, but he's not going to start. And he's frankly not played nearly as well as Simpson.
Ken McCusick joins us, FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, we talk about the complexities to the scheme, especially in preseason. What do coaches really use to evaluate some of these young players if they're not using their scheme?
I think, you know, if you talk to most coaches, they'd say they like to put players in a position where they have to win one-on-one or it's not an ideal circumstance so they can test them. It's kind of like having a hard math test and separating people who really know the material and don't. So I think that's what they'd say. So for instance, a good example of playing scheme that's not favorable to the player was what they did with Lucas Scott, the fullback. So he's been in for 71 offensive snaps this preseason, and they've run the ball 61 times. That's not even trying to break tendency in any way. They just want to say, hey, it's not going to be a great situation for you, but you know, go ahead and try and block under these circumstances. A lot of the running backs, I felt like it's been a similar situation. They obviously don't have Lamar Jackson, but they're also trying to run the ball with a backup offensive line when the other team knows it's coming, because in this game in particular, everyone wants to get the preseason over more than any other goal that they have.
Right.
What do you get out of, I mean, I'll tell you what I take. When it's preseason like this, I mean, I know it's always important to Harbaugh, but they dominated the preseason, given what one offensive, defensive touchdown all three games. I take that our twos and threes are better than yours, and that means the team is very deep. Is that, I mean, does it solidify the roster that way?
Yes. And first of all, it's absolutely true, and that's exactly the way I'd characterize it. And second of all, I'd say that the it's evident in who the Ravens have to cut today by 4 p.m. that all their hard cuts are on defense. Every one of their hard cuts is on defense. They have one maybe on offense deciding between a fourth running back, a 10th offensive lineman, that kind of thing. But they have about seven guys that could make another NFL roster probably that are at the end of their defense.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Think about it, guys that you don't want.
Seven guys.
We can't fit you here are going to go, and they probably play in the other teams.
And it's kind of what I want to piggyback off. Keon Martin made it really difficult to say, hey, you're not going to keep seven cornerbacks, right?
Yeah, it's very difficult. Keon Martin's had an unbelievable preseason, and obviously a lot of other front offices have seen tape of him and even the guys who are lazy and they'll just watch highlights, they've seen tapes.
What do you like about him? What?
Extremely physical, runs right to the football. He's 5'9", 170, so he reminds me a little bit of a player like Tavon Young in the past who was undersized but still very aggressive physically. So I like that about him. I like how he found the football in the air on that zone play where You know, he undercut the out route. He was reading the quarterback perfectly, picked it off. There's so much to like about him. He's very opportunistic. And you know, he's example. I mean, he could be a guy you could slip onto the practice squad possibly because he's not a extreme size and shape guy. There's a lot of 5'9", 170 cornerbacks out there who could play slot, but there aren't very many who can play it like Keon Martin can. So, yeah. You know, unfortunately, I think they have to keep him. I don't think they have a choice, and that means they'll have to risk somebody else, like an inside linebacker maybe instead.
Before we move on, I mean, because you're around this team, you know a lot about this football team, and you've seen a lot of football. Why is it that this front office consistently gets it so right with player scouting? You give coaches credit for player development, you do. Mm-hmm. But they give them such good pieces to start off with. What is it about it that they just constantly get it right?
I don't think it's any one thing, but you know, the continuity of the front office with DaCosta and Ozzie being there for all 30 years, basically, mm-hmm. is a wonderful starting point. And I think they've built and built on what they've had in mm-hmm. terms of how they looked at things. If you want me to pick one thing that I think gets at what you're asking, because it's really the UDFA group right. as much as the right. draftees, the UDFA group, their process for going after the UDFA is unbelievable. They have like 20 guys on the phone as soon as a draft is over trying to lock down these guys on UDFAs. And they have this limited amount of money to spend. And they have to go back to a central source to say, can I have another 1,000? Can I have another 1,000 kind right. of thing? That whole process has fascinated me. I'd love for the Ravens to, you know, show it at some point, but then I'm thinking, no, better keep that in house. It's obviously a big advantage. They get good UDFAs every year. They compete where they have to, and they get guys they like. They're very quiet, keep things in house. Years ago, they couldn't say Bart Scott's name. They couldn't use his name anywhere in the facility the year he was a UDFA. Because he was so unknown out of Northern Illinois, but they knew he was going to be right. a good player. Huh. Yeah.
Who's going to return? Special teams, they've made a tremendous improvement this year. They were mm-hmm. not great last year. Who's returning punts and kicks this year?
Okay, so punts is LaJonte Wester. He won the job yeah. easily with that week one performance, the first preseason game. In terms of kicks, that's really the question with Rasheen Ali. If he makes the roster, then you have a second guy to return kicks who's a running back. The comment has been made that you know the way they line up for kicks, it's more than anything like a zone run play where mm-hmm. you know you find your lane, you cut back, and yeah. you go. It's you do less of the running straight at the defense that you did with the longer kickoffs, like Jacoby Jones would say, yeah. get north, and then make one cut and yeah. go. But your one cut is you know a 30-degree cut,
yeah.
Instead of you know now it's a 90-degree cut maybe you make.
All right, so just kind of recap like. What's the toughest calls in your opinion that they have to make here with the final cut? Because it seems like, as you said, there's a lot of players they want to keep, but is there somebody you think they're really going to miss out on because they have so much talent?
Yeah, they have a lot. They were basically all on defense. We'll start the offense, though. The 10th offensive lineman, I believe Garrett Dellinger is someone they really need to try and keep. Corey Bullock, they will keep. He's the backup center. There's some guys who won't make it, like Samak, I think, is on the outside. Dellinger, I want them to keep. Cleveland is a potential handshake guy, so if they have a 56th guy they want on the roster, a guy they want to get in on injured reserve, they could do it with by having Cleveland be a handshake guy. But then if I go to the defense, that's where they basically all are. And Malik Ham is number one, had a really good preseason, and he's in year three, so there's not the kind of pressure to keep him that you would with a rookie who's got 4 years on the clock still left. Higgins and Chandler Martin, the inside linebackers, very tough cuts, but they may both be coming. Okoye and Jason Jones, the nose tackles, those are both big size and shape guys. Okoye's had an up and down preseason, and he's been around the league for a while, so I don't think he'll be taken, but you never know. Jason Jones has been a guy who looks like he really got in shape since he left Auburn, and is a guy I think could be in demand because he's definitely a size and shape guy. Braid is going to be cut, I assume, today because Lowry's ahead of him on the roster. And then the last one that a lot of people aren't talking about is Marquise Robinson, the cornerback. Yeah, I love the way he's played so far in the preseason.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Kim McCusick joins us. We're going to talk a little bit more about the roster, but what's the situation with Isaiah Likely? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Ken McCusick joins us in studio. Ken, we'll find out officially by 4:00 today. But what's this roster looking like according to you?
Yeah, so the big question is, will this finally be the year the Ravens take 26 on defense and 24 on offense? They've done it, I think, one other time that I can recall, but it's they almost never do it, and it almost has to be very special conditions for it to happen. But they've got, as I just mentioned, you know, before the break, you know, about 7 or 8 cuts on defense that are really cut to the bone kind of cuts. So this might be the year. If you're ever going to do it, this would be the year you do it. You tend to get a little more special teams value from your guys on defense. So in particular, they're cutting some guys like the two inside linebackers, Martin and Higgins are, you know, as I see it, will likely be cut today. But if they aren't, they'll keep them for their special teams value. So, you know, they've got options on defense to fill special teams that way. So do you want me to talk through the roster position by position? Okay. So quarterback, they've got two, Jackson and Rush. At running back, there are three guys who've made it for certain, and that's Henry, Hill, and Mitchell. I'll get to the kind of what's left at the end of this. At tight end, Ricard, Kolar, and Andrews are there. You'll notice Isaiah Likely is not. We'll talk about him later. Wide receiver, 6, Flowers, Bateman, Hopkins, Wallace, Walker, and Wester. No question about who they're keeping. I think they'll keep 9 offensive linemen for sure, and that's Stanley, Voorhees, Linderbaum, Fa'alele, Rosengarten, Noteboom, Vincent, Bullock, and either Dellinger or Cleveland. That would be my guess anyway for the 9. And then they have 2 spots remaining on offense that would take them to 25, and those spots could go to Dellinger or Cleveland for the other one as a possibility, and Ali, Likely, or even both for the second spot. Now, Ali, my theory is that he's on the team if Likely starts the season on IR.
Okay.
I think that makes kind of the most sense. So that's the offensive side anyway for starters. If you want to talk about anything like that before we move on.
Yeah, sure, go ahead. I mean, if you want to get to that side of the football, because I want to talk about Buffalo a little bit and look ahead.
Okay, sure.
How long is Likely out if he goes on IR?
He has to sit out 4 weeks and be back in week 5.
That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if they did that, it would be... That's a tough call to make, depending on where you see his health at.
Yeah, if you think he could be back in 2 weeks, you don't put him out for 4.
Especially with who you play in the first 4 weeks.
Right.
You know, let me ask you this about Buffalo, because we saw what they did to him in the regular season. If they can get back to that, the turnovers that happened in the postseason, frustrating. A little chip on their shoulder, and I'm sure there's some revenge, and Mark Andrews will get peppered a little bit in this game. What are your thoughts on how to beat this Buffalo team? Is it solely with this run game?
I mean, they outplayed them in both games by such a wide margin, it's not even funny. The first time they won 35-10. The second time they dominated everything they did offensively and defensively against
them.
They just had 3 turnovers. So it's, you know, that's the frustrating thing about this Ravens team is they don't need a different roster to win the Super Bowl. They need the roster they had the last 2 years. They need that set of advantages again to happen. You know, they need some things then to work out for them in the playoffs.
Just the fact that Buffalo is small, the defense is, they're very light. Mm-hmm. Their linebackers, the heaviest one's like 238 or something. Most of them are 220, 225. Derrick Henry's like 30 to 40 pounds heavier than most of their linebackers. I can't see them stopping this Ravens running game. They couldn't do it last year, so why would they do it this year?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's how they're really they've been a team that's favored some lighter guys on the inside, and I don't think they're really set up to stop the run that well. That poses problems for them against a team like Baltimore and good. I mean,
I'm gonna look at 2 linebackers, 219, 223, 224, 232. It's like that's their linebacking core. Mm-hmm.
Ken McKusick joins us, filmstudybaltimore.com. Going back to the whole Buffalo situation, the roster and the buildup of that, and Ed brings out a great point. This is one of those games where it's downhill running. I remember last year, Derrick Henry announced his presence with authority, so to speak. You got to beat him early and often and pound them in a running game. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, I think be balanced is fine too. The Ravens did everything right offensively in really both games, and in particular in the playoff game. Mm-hmm. I think they threw for 9 yards per pass. They ran for about 6. I mean, there wasn't anything they didn't do well. They just didn't get it done in terms of the turnovers.
Now, Ken, I was gonna. We talked about Loop at extent, and I feel like he's kind of silenced maybe some of the critics or people that had questions of who's going to follow Justin Tucker. Do you have ultimate confidence in this guy from what you saw in the last few preseason games and at camp?
Yeah, I think it definitely improved in the last few preseason games. At camp, they were really focused on having him make a bunch of short kicks. And Chris Horton came to the podium a couple of times and said, we're going to focus on the 80% of kicks that are under 40 yards. And that includes points after touchdown, which are not weighted the same, of course. Yeah. You know, they're 1-point plays as opposed to three. But he said, you know, he'll get his opportunities from longer distance when they arise. And they went out of their way to give him some longer opportunities in this last game, including the 61. And then, you know, he obviously showed up very well these last couple of games with some much longer field goals.
What'd you think of Armour Davis? I know we talked to him early at camp, standing there watching him. And like, what'd you think of him this whole preseason?
Completely different player than what I've seen before. And I've been one of his biggest critics. I thought he'd be a good chance to be cut this year as a fourth-year player. The easiest article you'll ever write every summer is, look at the fourth-year players and talk about what percentage chance each of them has to be cut. Okay, but Armour Davis is a guy that had not been able to find the football in the air, always had the speed, had a little Brandon Stevens-itis in terms of getting his head turned and finding the ball. He has figured it out in these preseason games. The first and the third, he only played three snaps in that second game because he got sick. But the first and the third game, he's absolutely outstanding. And one of the Ravens' defensive MVPs both games, found the football, reacted to the football well on the interception in the last game. He looks like a completely different guy. And he'll be the Ravens' fifth cornerback, and he will see playing time, I am almost certain, given the health of the top guys.
Okay. Yeah, that's good news. Tell us all about film study and how you're getting ready for the regular season.
All right, yeah, filmstudybaltimore.com is the website. You can go out and find both articles and podcasts out there. I'm at Film Study Ravens on Twitter. The defensive review, and that's a written review, is posted yesterday. Offense, the article is up, and the podcast will come out today as well.
Ken, can you tell everybody real quick, so what's your schedule like during football season? Do you... because I know you do your breakdown. When can people see that? Is it Tuesday that you...
So article on Monday for the defense, on Wednesday usually for the offensive line scoring, and on Tuesday morning and Wednesday morning is when the podcasts come out on both sides. Those are 2 hours each of detail on both sides.
Yeah, you want your Ravens fix? There it is.
There it is. Thank you very much. Ken McCusick, 410-583-1057. That's the number. Mike Locksley joins us to talk some college football. Terps version at 9 o'clock, but on the other side, we get stupid with Jeremy Cohn.
Oh, thank God we're going to get stupid, because we have a lot of stupid things to go over. I am going to tell you, our headliner's pretty funny. It's about, I don't even know how to explain this, Joe, people wanting to watch other people do something that you can't believe they would want to watch that. I guess that's how I would put it. Hmm. We're also going to talk about Sexy Red. She did something to her lasagna, which has me asking a lot of questions. Is this a cultural thing? Is it just stupid? I don't get it. And lastly, more people on planes doing things that would disgust you. I can't wait to talk about this one. It's hideous, and I can't believe the person didn't say something to someone else. We do that next in the World of Stupid. All right, so on flights, you've seen a lot of ridiculous things. Ryanair, which is one of the worst... I guess, is that more of a European? Or no, EasyJet is the one that I had issues with. They suck. They try to okie-doke you when they realize you're American and overseas, and you can't get on your flight because you didn't pay for these bags. Yes, I did. Here's my receipt. That's not our receipt. You're going to have to pay for these bags. That's what happened to us.
Really?
Yeah. It was an okie-doke and a shakedown for about $75. In the end, you get on the flight. You're hoping that you don't have the crying baby next to you, that you got enough arm room. All these things going on. And I think one of the things you hope is that it smells pleasant in there, right? Yeah. And we've already talked about this. People taking off their shoes and the things that they like to do. Well, a Ryanair passenger was horrified by vile, cheesy odor on the flight. The source was a shocker. The smell kept getting worse and worse. And as they looked through this and they tried to figure out what the issue was, the woman said it smelt unclean like cheese. Her name's Sophie Brame. The trip was going swimmingly until about an hour in, when the 27-year-old noticed a foul odor. Couldn't figure out where it was coming from. I could smell something. It kept getting worse and worse and worse. I knew it wasn't me because I didn't have my shoes off and my feet don't smell like that. But the person behind her had taken their shoes off, even with the socks still on, put his feet under her seat, and that's where the smell came from. Mm. She said she could see his feet on that part of the chair when the smell was strongest is when his feet were, you know, closer to it or near that well where she could smell. And she's going, this is awful. But she did nothing. She didn't say anything. Like, turn around and tell the guy to put his damn shoes on.
I bet most people do nothing, yeah.
I think so. But look, when the smell's that bad, you have to. Like, go to a steward. It's like, what is this? Can you smell this? This is awful. You didn't pay to sit in that. I didn't come to work to sit in his ass.
Yeah, you don't leave.
You stay. I can't. I want to get paid.
But I will say this, though. I mean, I'll do that here. But if I'm on an airplane, I'm going to the bathroom.
But usually on the airplane, like a buddy of mine told me this, and I brought this up before, that the seats are made to where you should be able to fart and it shouldn't smell. That it just.
I'm going to test that.
All right. Try it out. Try it on the team flight. But again, man, foul ass feet. Like, I don't know about you. There's so many bad smells, nasty ass feet that you guys like.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, hang on a second.
Toe sucking weirdos.
I don't like nasty feet.
All feet are nasty.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
Yeah, you know how much bacteria is there?
How much bacteria is in somebody's mouth? Yet you kiss them.
You don't know who I'm kissing. Actually, you do. You know some of them. No, some of them.
Dirtiest place on your body.
I don't know.
I mean, it is actually.
You all checked place everywhere on my body to see
your mouth.
Dirty.
Your feet are probably the least offensive.
Oh, exactly. Get out of here! There's foot fungus and yeah. All right, let's get to this. There are a lot of cultural things when it comes to food, right? How certain people eat or make certain dishes. We've had whether you buy into the arguments of white people putting raisins in their potato salad, and should you do this, should you do that? Well, Sexy Red, which she must have given herself that own nickname because I don't get it, shows how she eats lasagna. As I'll flip this around, guys, and show you, she pours sugar all over her lasagna before she eats it. Now, I've seen people...
That's just bad lasagna.
I've seen people that put sugar in their spaghetti sauce to sweeten it up.
Sicilians do that sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to...
Take some of the acid out of the sauce.
Yeah. What, the acidity? Is that what it gets? So, like, I'm trying to remember which one it is. I don't know if it's Lido's or Little Caesars. Maybe it's both. They have, like, a sweeter sauce on their pizzas.
I'm not a fan of that, by the way.
Okay. What, the sweet sauce?
No.
I don't mind it, but, like, dumping a ton of sugar on lasagna... Have you ever seen anything like that? Or anything similar?
I have not, actually.
Like, I put... There's certain things. Like, we had that whole thing that was... what was it? Mustard on watermelon, and people were saying it works.
Right. Well, I put on watermelon and salt.
I put salt on watermelon. Yeah. It's good, but I usually just eat it by itself. Do you guys have any things that you do that would be seemed...
First of all, I know some idiot who has to have applesauce with their spaghetti.
What?
Yep.
What in the 7-year-old?
Is he going to the first grade soon?
Mm-hmm. They mix together or on the side?
I think it was on the side, yeah. But it has to be.
It seems like something a kid would get. And then it's just kind of stuck with him.
Not a kid.
No, I'm saying it just stuck with him through life.
I got one.
You got one?
This is something people in my family do. Butter and cinnamon sugar on rice.
On rice?
Yeah.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah. Because I mean, a lot of people eat rice for desserts. Like,
rice pudding.
Oh, Thai sticky rice.
Yeah.
I mean, the mango sticky rice in Thai restaurants is my favorite dessert on earth, I think.
Sugar on lasagna. I don't get that one.
I don't get that one.
All right. Well, I retweeted this story. If you want to see it, at JCon Sports on Twitter. It's kind of interesting. And there's a Dallas man was following around women and harassing them. He was asking them if he could do something. I'm just going to play the audio.
Like, I was walking and this guy parked, and I didn't even think he was parking for me, but then he was like waving at me from behind, and I could hear him talking to me, but I was pretending to listen to my headphones. But then he like followed me and he stopped in front of me, and I was like, what? And he says really slow too. He said it so calm, which is what's it. He said, excuse me, miss, my English isn't that good. And I was like, okay. And I just like, I had this weird feeling because he followed me for so long. He says, excuse me, miss, my English isn't that good. And then he asks to watch me go to the bathroom because he's a f***ing weirdo. And I just, like, I say, no, go f*** yourself. And I start screaming because, like, I think he's a freak and obviously a weirdo that very intentionally wanted to do that. And, like, he just ran away, ran back into his car, and, like, drove off. But it just pisses me off so much when stuff like this happens.
How much? Oh, no, and by the way, he was asking to watch her poop, which, if you didn't get that, but in
this
the longer clip.
All the time.
Really?
I know somebody personally, she went out to a park to pee. Guy runs out with a napkin, offered $50 to pee in the napkin. I am not joking. Yep.
You know, whenever I think that I might have a weird kink, and then you go on the internet and you're going, what is that? And then it's out there because there are people that want to watch this. Or
yes.
Oh. Get into this.
Yep. Yep.
I'm the scat man. You know that.
One of my favorite Commissioner Baltimore stories.
What? Oh, the club, right?
The idiot sergeant, came in? Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to tell it real quick? Like, for people that haven't heard this?
It's quick. I'll make it as quick as I can. We had this real D-bag sergeant. And the precincts boarded each other. I was in 6th. He was the 10th. We boarded 14th Street. Gun run comes in at a club in our precinct in Greenwich Village. I don't go in. This idiot comes, lights and sirens. What's going on? I said, we got a gun run here. It happens every night. I'm going in. Go away. Okay, go. He goes, he was the reason people hate cops, by the way.
Yeah.
He had the mustache and all. He was such a douche nozzle. He runs up the stairs, runs on into the club. It was scat night.
Oh.
He walked through a room full of human waste in uniform.
See, and I've heard these stories.
Told you it wasn't a real gun run, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, we're in some. Yeah, you are.
In deep. Yeah.
But I've heard of some of these like different things that go on hotels where, you know, you've got these weird.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm not trying to kink shame here, but there are people in weird things, whether it's furries or these bronies with the My Little Pony stuff. Like there's something a little off there, but okay. But then you get to the further ones where it's like, what, steampunk and all this other weird stuff. Joe, do you want to?
Steampunk's just dressing up, though.
I mean, it's like there's, but I'm saying it's sort of like a fetish type thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But you get into these other ones where it's like what you talked about. Mm-hmm. It's scat night and it's,
yeah. You
know, and like hearing how the hotel smells when there's like 80 people there that are into this. And it's like, oh my God, it's disgusting. But hope you enjoy your breakfast. Good morning. That's your World of Stupid. Yuck.
410-583-1057 is the number if you want to lay into Jeremy Kahn for that last story. Mike Lochley, head coach of the Maryland Terps, will join us at 9 o'clock. But on the other side, has Gunnar Henderson's performance since last June quelled any fears that he isn't a top five player in the game? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan.
Center field. Henderson robs Nathaniel Lowe. He got Lowe. My goodness. Little tip of the cap. He got it, and he ripped it between Lowe and Hamilton. He's thinking it. He's going to get there. Standing in with his 30th double.
Yeah, we're going to be all right as long as we got Gunner. We're going to be all right. Jeremy, you said it, and I'm glad you said it, because when I said it, you know, people think I'm a homer about it. He has best player in baseball talent. Is there any doubt in your mind this guy is one of the top five players in the game?
He already is. Yeah, I think he is. He's gonna be up there in the same conversation as you just said. That, you know, best players in baseball. I'm talking about guys like Shohei and all. He's gonna be in the conversation with that. So. I love his competitive spirit, because I heard this, you know, what you were talking about earlier when he gave, you know, it's like, I like to win, but I hate to lose.
Yeah.
Just that's like, yeah, I get that. Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, I think, look, and for me, we'd have to sit down and look at all the players here to say, but again, I think it's one of those, hey, that's a top five restaurant I've eaten at, where it's like, you know, Lamar was calling everyone the GOAT.
Right.
Kind of like that.
Right.
Where it's like, it's up to your preference and how you look at it. Could you say that he's a top 10 player and have him lower in this? Sure. But if you can't look at the talent and what he brings to the table, and power numbers weren't up this year, he did start the season hurt. Mm-hmm. The one thing I love about this season, you brought it up yesterday and I didn't even think about it, is how well he's played shortstop.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the big questions last year. It's like, what's going on with him? He's got a bunch of errors, throwing errors, fielding errors. And that seems like it's progressed and gotten better. And these guys are supposed to be taking steps forward. And when you look at it, Gunner's a player that if you looked at other teams and started talking to their general managers, I think you'd hear a different story about how they talk about him. I think that about Adley Rutschman too, by the way. Mm-hmm. But again, it's easier to look at Gunner and go, yeah, that guy's been unbelievably special. So it feels weird, because if you ever thought Manny Machado was a top five, top 10 player, In his first 4 years, Gunnar's been better almost across the entire board than Machado.
Absolutely. Yes.
From an offensive standpoint.
Yeah. His defense improved, though.
Yeah, what happened, if you look at him early in his career, well, still early in his career, Gunnar would throw a lot on the run. And that was a thing that he did. And it's sort of like the comparison I gave you with the new ownership group. When you inherit someone that won 101 games and then they win 91 games, it's hard to make decisions or to make changes because they're success. It's not until you fail. Now, when Gunnar had all those errors in a lot of games, small amount of games, remember last year? See, Tony Mancelino, who's the infield coach at the time, still is, I think, couldn't go to Gunnar and say, well, let's make these changes because Gunnar wasn't failing. But when he started making all these changes, if you notice, now Gunnar's not on the run all the time anymore.
Yeah.
When he has to be, he will. But if you notice now, he plants his feet, he gets down in the athletic position, he makes throws. That's not what he was doing early in his career. And I think if you're Tony Mancelino, you're like, I'm not going to change anything yet because he doesn't need me to change it. However, if and when, which probably will be a win, because that's not how you do play shortstop in baseball. When that time happened, Mancelino said, all right, let's make some changes. Mancelino's great at what he does, by the way, an infield coach. I mean, he is superb. 410-583-1057, that's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Let's go out to the phone lines. Let's go to Rashawn in Baltimore. What's up, Rashawn?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How y'all doing?
Doing well. How are you?
So we was at the game Saturday talking about this, right, about Gunnar Henderson and being as though, you know, Scott Boras is his agent and everything, and the likelihood of us not re-signing him. First of all, somebody said, I ain't going to say who, they was like, man, if they ever run into Scott Boras, they're going to try to break his ankle, break his leg or something, man, because he's just bad for baseball, you know. But anyway, seeing what happened with Manny Machado, right, how we didn't resign him, and then when we did trade him, right, we didn't really get much back for him. I mean, we got Kramer, which is like a, you know what I mean?
That wasn't the prized possession of that. It was a Cuban kid.
Using the Diaz.
Mm-hmm. It didn't pan out. Do you think the O's would be smarter this time around? Like, all right, we're not going to be able to resign this guy. Let's try to trade him while he got, you know, maybe a year or two left on his deal and try to get a haul for him.
They're not trading Gunnar. No. The only way they trade Gunnar, well, put it this way, Gunnar's going to do the same thing to them that Manny did. I'm not re-signing.
Yeah. And if that's the case,
then they will. But if Gunnar doesn't, if Gunnar tells them, look, I'm going to go into free agency and, you know, I'm going to look at everybody's offer. If he does that, then the Orioles aren't going to trade him, because if you trade him, why give him a chance to see how good it is someplace else?
Well, you're not going to be able to afford the re-sign. You can't even be able to outbid for the free agent.
You guys don't listen. You guys got to stop being shipwrecked.
This is the same ownership we had.
Yeah, you got to stop. You got to listen to what's being said. Could you get the sound from David Rubenstein at the press conference?
Fine. I got you.
Yeah, you did get me. They almost got me again. I'm like, you don't know. It's David Rubenstein. Give me that sound when he talked about the resources that you're like battered people. You understand? This is what he had to say.
The best players the Orioles have had over the years, historically, have been homegrown. So Jim Palmer, his entire career is here. Brooks Robinson, entire career here. Cal Ripken, entire career here. So obviously you can get good players from time to time who are come later in their career and may not finish their career here, but we've had a tradition of having players who spent their entire career here, and we hope Sam will as well. And we think, you know, we've got a lot of other talented people on the team who we hope will ultimately want to spend their entire career here or spend long-term arrangements with us, and we're committed to doing more of these as soon as we can.
And that's not what I wanted. It's one that he talked about. This ownership group has the resources.
Yeah.
And that's the one that I wanted. But
I just think Brooks and Palmer. I mean, although they free agency didn't come until 76, so everybody stayed. You know, it's like they played beyond that. But I just found that.
Yeah, and look, there are players that stayed with the team for a long time and then were hanging on a little bit too long and went to other teams.
This is the one that I wanted right here.
The Orioles ownership group is fairly well capitalized, and we have the resources to do these kind of deals. It takes two to do deals.
The Orioles ownership group is well capitalized. Did you hear the last ownership group say that, Ed? The last ownership group would constantly talk. And this is not beating them up. This is factual. They told you how much money they didn't have.
Right.
The last ownership group would tell you how much money they did not have. This guy just stood up and said, we're well capitalized. You know why he says well capitalized? Because you got to put the money in escrow.
Because saying we're rich is kind of tacky.
And also because having the capital means we can put the money in escrow.
Yeah.
If it takes $400 million, we got $400 million to put in escrow.
Mm-hmm. How many ownership groups feel comfortable writing a $600 million contract and then just putting that in escrow? Like, that's one player of how many on the team that you're, you know.
He's telling you all, calm down.
Now, this doesn't
we got
mean,
the money.
This doesn't mean they end up keeping him. It doesn't. It's going to be up to Gunner, but they're going to be in the market.
But it also means that, exactly, they can't afford him. He's telling you basically, calm down. We got the loot.
Give me the loot.
Settle down, people. But you don't want to believe that because you want to believe they don't have the money. That's what you want to believe. Jeremy Kahn's Daily Line at 9:30, but on the other side, college football with Coach Mike Locksley on The Fan.